KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. It was 1986. A man in a suit walked onto the stage of a large theater. He had big news for the thousands assembled. There'd been a death. The man in the suit was a clean-shaven 25-year-old. He carried pages of notes in his hand, and he set those notes on the lectern and started talking.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello. My name is David Miscavige, and I'm very happy that you could all make it to this important briefing this evening. Okay, how about now?
I've always known that we as humans have strange ways of talking about death. I've heard people refer to it as moving on, or passing away, or going to a better place. But the man in the suit used other terms to talk about death, ones I've never heard before. And I don't know, I think the terms were new to a lot of people in that audience too. The microphones in the theater picked up their reactions, and I can't quite tell what I hear in their voices, whether it's surprise, or grief, or joy, or something else entirely.
He has now moved on to his next OT, level of OT research. This level is beyond anything any one of us ever imagined. This level is in fact done in an exterior state, meaning that it is done completely exterior from the body. At this level of OT, the body is nothing more than an impediment and encumbrance to any further gain as an OT. Thus, at 2,000 hours Friday, the 24th of January, AD 36, L. Ron Hubbard discarded the body he had used in this lifetime for 74 years, 10 months, and 11 days. The body he had used to facilitate his existence in this messed universe had ceased to be useful, and in fact, had become an impediment to the work he now must do outside of its confines. We felt it was important as Scientologists that you were the first to become aware of this fact.
More than anything else, I think of L. Ron Hubbard as a writer, prolific writer, intensely so. He wrote so much that apparently he once owned a typewriter with extra keys on it for common words, just to save him the keystrokes. It was 1,084 published books. That's what the Guinness Book of World Records says. And some of those books were pulp fantasy, romance, western, sci-fi. Some of them were written under pen names and largely forgotten. But some of his books were religious writings, the foundation of his Church of Scientology. And some of these writings were so valued that the church put them in underground time capsules full of inert gases, in chambers protected by vault doors built to last 1,000+ years without maintenance. And these religious writings, they're fairly off-limits to me. Their printing and distribution is tightly managed and protected, and their copyrights are highly enforced. Occasionally, things are leaked by defectors or released in court cases, and thus the mythology of Scientology's higher levels emerge. But from what I can tell, it's still all based on stories. Just stories, lots about death and what happens after it. And that's where I think Scientology bears its closest resemblance to the religions that I find more familiar.
The body is a physical object. It is not the being himself. The being we knew as L. Ron Hubbard still exists. However, the body he had could no longer serve his purposes. This decision was one made at complete cause by L. Ron Hubbard. Although you may feel grief, understand that he did not and does not now. He has simply moved on to his next step. As Scientologists, we know more than anyone that we are not bodies. We have bodies. And our current existences in our current bodies are but one in a million that we have lived and will live. LRH, in fact, used this lifetime in the body we knew, to accomplish what no man has ever accomplished. He unlocked the mysteries of life and gave us the tools so that we could free ourselves and our fellow man. L. Ron Hubbard completed everything he set out to do and more. The fact that he causatively and willingly discarded the body after it was no longer useful, to him signifies his ultimate success, the conquest of life that he embarked upon half a century ago.
In the 30 years since this tape was recorded, Scientology hasn't made it very clear what they think happened to L. Ron Hubbard, and whether or not they think he'll return. And so I've been trying to figure out what it means to keep a theology hidden. This clapping, it goes on for another 2 minutes. I'll fade it out now, though.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
So this is a science telling you what happened to you in the past.
The podcast about...
the unknown.
There's an office for L. Ron Hubbard in Copenhagen. You can see it from the street through a giant window. Inside, it's brick and wood, two chairs for guests, one for Hubbard. There's a bookshelf full of his writings, a couple framed pictures, a clock, a captain's hat.
On the desk, you can see a sign with a name on it. It says L. Ron Hubbard, founder. But you can see in this office, for example, he has like a little figure of what I guess is the Little Mermaid, a wooden figure that looks like it would represent that very like Copenhagen like symbol. And then he also has like a book on Copenhagen displayed.
My friend Elizabeth Peterson heard an unusual rumor about this office. She heard that it wasn't just decorative.
Yeah. I can't remember who first told me this. I feel like more than one person told me. But I've heard that in every church of Scientology in the world, there's an office with a desk and a chair and a lamp and so on. That's an exact replica of the office that L. Ron Hubbard had when he was alive. And I've heard that the reason it's there is because one day Scientologists are expecting L. Ron Hubbard to return to the earth, a bit like Jesus. And of course, you don't know where he'll be returning to. And just in case it's in Copenhagen, for example, they have an office here. And so allegedly, they also have an office in all the other places in the world that have Scientology churches, just in case that's where he shows up. So everyone's prepared. That's what I heard. But I haven't been able to confirm it.
Rumors are funny things because they don't have an author written on them. They morph as they move from time to time and place to place. But I think this rumor would seem less believable if it were about most any other religion. Elizabeth and I would just go to the library, check out a book of scripture, and see for ourselves. But because this is Scientology, we had to just go in and ask.
Afraid of going in and asking or something.
I'd be happy to go in there. Yeah. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Hi. How are you? Well, we saw the office outside, and
I've been feeling torn. Perhaps it's none of my business to bother other people about their religious beliefs. The Scientology press officers certainly seem to think so. my emails to the Danish press officer went unanswered, and my emails to the American press officer did too. But Elizabeth and I did have a short conversation with the person behind the desk that day. She didn't want to be recorded, but she told us that the replica office was there just as a commemoration of the founder, nothing more. She didn't seem to think that anyone would be reincarnated into it. And that is the truth, as far as I can tell. That's the truth.
Sure, I mean, Scientology has facilities all around the world. Whether you're talking in the United States or Europe or Australia, there will be an office set aside for L. Ron Hubbard. And it's not just, you know, an extra room. I mean, it's appointed specifically for L. Ron Hubbard. It's got the things that he would need if he was there. And I've been told they even have a pack of cool cigarettes in the desk waiting for him, his favorite brand.
This is not a Scientologist you're hearing. Every Scientologist that I asked to come on tape turned me down. This is Tony Ortega, and he used to run The Village Voice, and now he authors a blog about Scientology called The Underground Bunker.
And from 1967 to 1975, L. Ron Hubbard ran Scientology from a ship. He actually had three ships, and his was the flagship. So while he was running Scientology from sea, he could be anywhere. They were basically in the Mediterranean and in the Atlantic. But they had all these offices they were running in Australia and South America, South Africa and North America. And this tradition sprung up that they each place would have an office in case L. Ron Hubbard showed up. So that's why they have those offices. And then – so you might ask, why do they have them today? He died in 1986. But that's one of the things about Scientology I find most fascinating, that it's kind of frozen in time. In certain ways, it's still 1965 in Scientology. And the man who runs Scientology, David Miscavige, insists on opening these new orgs. They just opened one last week in Dublin, and there's another one next week in England. And they always have a really finely appointed L. Ron Hubbard office.
When I talked to them, they said it was for the sake of tradition, right? I mean, do Scientologists believe that L. Ron Hubbard is coming back to life?
Well, I think it is for the sake of tradition as far as, you know, this, you know, like this Dublin office that just opened up will have an L. Ron Hubbard office, and I think it's tradition. But there is this other question about where did he go and is he coming back? So the tradition is that he has gone to some place called Target 2, and that is another planet somewhere either in this galaxy or another galaxy where he's preparing Target 2 for Scientology's arrival so that the Scientologists that are here on Earth today are supposed to be, quote, clearing the planet. In other words, basically having Scientology take over, calm this planet down, free it of war and insanity, and then they can move on to Target 2 and join Hubbard. So that's one tradition, is that he's not coming back, but they're going to go join him. But Jeff, there's a whole other tradition in Scientology as well. It's much more secretive, and that has to do with another an entirely different entity known as the Church of Spiritual Technology. Now, that was started in 1981-82. L. Ron Hubbard called for a complete reorganization of the Scientology movement, and he wanted there to be layers of corporations to make it tougher for somebody to get to the ultimate one, which is this very secretive entity known as the Church of Spiritual Technology, CST. CST ultimately has total control of all of Scientology's trademarks, corporate copyrights, but CST lends the copyrights to another organization called the Religious Technology Center, RTC, which David Miscavige actually runs. It's all this complex stuff. But what's really fun about CST is that L. Ron Hubbard gave it this bizarre mandate. And the other thing I want to point out is CST is so secretive. I've talked to top former executives from the Church of Scientology itself who knew virtually nothing about CST. I mean, CST is secretive even to other Scientologists. And so CST's mandate is to build underground vaults where the words and lectures of L. Ron Hubbard are stored to last centuries in case their civilization collapses. The headquarters for this group of secretive bases is in a compound near Lake Arrowhead, just in the mountains north of Los Angeles. And they have these vaults, and they spend a lot of money to preserve Hubbard's words. They actually etch his writings on stainless steel plates stored in titanium banker boxes with inert gases. So, you know, they're storing this for hundreds of years, thousands of years. But there's also another feature of CST bases that only came out recently, because I managed to find one person who worked at CST who came out and has talked publicly. So talking to this former employee, he was the first one that let me know that not only do each of these bases have an underground vault, but they also have what they call the LRH house. And this is a finely appointed house, full-sized house, all furnished, and it's sitting there empty. And I said, well, why do you call it the LRH house? And he told me, well, that's where Hubbard will come when he returns. And I said, return to do what? And he said, well, to take over Scientology again. So in Scientology, there's this one entity, CST, which does believe that Hubbard will return at some point. And they believe it so much that they have built these elaborate houses at each of these locations in New Mexico, in the mountains north of Los Angeles, way up northern California on the coast. They have these houses waiting for Hubbard. And they also, at three of the locations in California and the one in New Mexico, they also have a symbol carved into the ground that you can see from the air. And it's two interlocking circles, which is the logo for the Church of Spiritual Technology. And this has always been a very curious feature. Various people have flown over the base in New Mexico. That's the one you can see the best. And I've always puzzled about that. What is that giant symbol in the ground supposed to be doing? And this former CST employee said that's supposed to guide Hubbard's spirit back to this location.
Why do you think that same person later told you that that wasn't actually what they said?
That puzzles me, and I'm not sure what to think about it, because I have it in my notes. I know that's what he told me, that the symbol is there to guide Hubbard's spirit. But then when I was either on the radio or I had written another story, he called me up and said, you know what, I didn't say that. I don't know. That's what he told me when we first did the interview, that the symbol in the ground is to guide Hubbard's spirit so that he can find that location. And then they've got a house waiting for him. But that's only CST. And again, CST is very secretive. There's only a few Scientologists that actually work there. And I don't know that the rest of the Scientology movement is aware that they're supposed to be looking for Hubbard to come back.
How do you vet a source who says, this is what I used to believe, when the credibility has been drawn into question by the brainwashing?
I don't use that word. I mean, I think there's a lot of conditioning and indoctrination that goes on in Scientology. But I think that, you know, generally these people are very lucid and they're aware of what's going on with them. You have to be fairly literate and patient to be a Scientologist. It takes a lot of concentration and a lot of reading. But no, there's always a question when somebody reaches out to me and says, I was in the Church of Scientology and I want to talk to you about it. There's always vetting that goes through. And, you know, fortunately, I've been doing it long enough that I can get through the jargon somewhat and I can, you know, tell if somebody's generally telling me the truth. And then I look for corroboration with other people. And that's one of the first things that tips me off. When somebody comes out and says something that I've never heard from somebody, that's usually a bad sign.
And to that point, you have one piece of evidence saying that there is a house somewhere that is being prepared for L. Ron Hubbard's eventual return. And how much water should I put in that claim?
No, that's a good question, because with CST in particular, we really only have one person that came out. His name is Dylan Gill, and he's a remarkable young man, and he spent years in that organization. But in that particular case, you're right, it's Dylan Gill. And I wish we had other people who had come out of CST that could confirm that. But, you know, it does sound similar to what we see at these other orgs as well.
I've kind of come to the assumption that the scripture varies depending on what level of Scientologist you are. Is that the right understanding or the wrong understanding?
No, you're right. And some of the stuff is pretty public. For example, all Scientologists are expected to read Dianetics, Hubbard's book, which came out in 1950, and that's you can get that in a bookstore. But then once you get into Scientology, you start taking these courses and you have to pay for them. And they start out fairly inexpensive, but then they get pretty pricey very quickly. And all of that material is considered confidential. And the other thing is there's no belief. I mean, I've had Scientologists try to explain this to me that, you know, Scientology is a science. And it's an exact science. It's this use of this device to help you recover actual memories that occurred to you millions of years ago. You're not being asked to believe those things. This is a science telling you what happened to you in the past.
Do you think that it's appropriate to ever have secrets in a belief system?
I think it's okay to have secrets. I mean, I think that as far as, you know, arcane knowledge and definitely if you're something like Christianity or Judaism, you would expect that if you're a part of the faith and part of the structure for 30 or 40 years, you might get to learn some things other people don't. But I think one of the things that concerns me about Scientology is that it keeps its most basic ideas so secret from its own people. So for example, in Christianity, Judaism, Islam, it should only take you a few minutes to describe what they're about. You know, in Christianity, you accept Jesus Christ as your savior and you'll live forever. That's it. You know, it takes 20 seconds. And you can be in Christianity, you can be a Methodist or a Baptist for 50 years and that just doesn't change. I mean, yeah, you can read the Bible and there's a lot of details, but nothing secret. Scientology, it takes you 7, 8, 9 years and maybe $100,000, $200,000 before you even get to OT3 and start to learn this backstory about a galactic overlord who brought all these unseen entities to Earth that are stuck to you and you now have to remove them. And you're paying $600, $700, $800 an hour to remove unseen hitchhiking alien souls that are attached to you. I mean, how many people would join Scientology if they realized that's what's going on in the upper levels? So that kind of secrecy I find really troubling because not only are they not leveling with their own people, but there are these huge price tags attached to it.
Do you ever worry that focusing on the bizarreness of the scripture and the belief system can minimize the actual human suffering that happens to people?
Yeah, and that's why I really try to separate it. I mean, people have gone through some really difficult things and their families have been ripped apart. And I'm not going to ask them what they think about a galactic overlord named Xenu. You know, I'm more sensitive to what they've been through. And a lot of the people that first come out of the church, you understand they're leaving because they've fed up with David Miscavige. They haven't necessarily given up their interest in L. Ron Hubbard and his ideas. I try to be very respectful of that. So I try to focus on the practices. I do write about the beliefs. I do write about the lectures and things. I think they're fascinating. I think they're fun. But I am sensitive to people that are coming out of the Church of Scientology that, you know, I'm interested in what they were doing in there, why they were in for so long, what drove them away, how they're putting their life back together. I'm not going to ask them to justify why they ascribe to auditing or Xenu or any of that kind of thing.
This first question that I had, which is like based off of this rumor that was identified as a rumor when I first heard it, which is the L. Ron Hubbard offices in Scientology churches are there for him to be reincarnated into, right? Is that frivolous or is there any kernel of anything important in that question?
Well, that might be a sort of garbled combination of the offices at the orgs and the LRH houses at CST. I mean, I think that person told you the truth when they said that was a tradition and they don't expect him to come back. But then at CST, they have these LRH houses and they have these symbols in the ground, and at least one employee told me that they are expecting Hubbard to return.
Would you say Scientology is more shaped like a onion or shaped like an apple?
Wow. I have to say, if we're going to use that analogy, I'm going to have to say a bunch of grapes, because there's like 20 or 30 entities that make up this movement of Scientology. And some are more important than others, of course. But, I mean, it's an alphabet soup of, you know, CSTR, GCASI, CSI. I mean, so many different organizations and really secretive little groups that all make up this thing called Scientology.
I think that's it.
All right, man.
Hey, that's useful.
Back before I talked with Tony, I wrote an email to one of these entities, the Scientology Information Center, based out of Los Angeles. I asked them what happened to L. Ron Hubbard after he died. Will he come back? And if so, will he use the offices built for him in the churches? After my previous experiences with silence from the church, I really wasn't expecting a response. I thought about it more in the form of due diligence, a final attempt to hear the official word. But a couple hours later, I got a friendly response with answers to my questions. And so I wrote back and I asked for a phone interview. I was quickly and politely told no, but I kept writing back with more questions, and my source gave me more answers. And we kept doing this back and forth. Sometimes I'd take a full week to write back, but they'd always write me with this quick and friendly response. And when I say quick, I mean like never more than a day, often less than an hour. Each email was cordial and signed with the same friendly name. I felt a little sad once when they wrote me back at 9 p.m. local time on a Friday evening. Of course, I'm guilty of the same thing. Anyways, my source didn't want to be named and didn't want me to quote directly from the emails we sent to each other. And that's fine because I can still tell you the broad strokes of what we talked about. Here are the takeaways. L. Ron Hubbard's office exists for the sake of tradition. They're a tribute to him. The teachings of Scientology do not lay out any specific plans for his return to Earth. The internet is rampant with false rumors about Scientology's beliefs. And counter to popular opinion, Scientology is not secretive at all. It's quite open to anyone who will ask questions. And also, no. They'd never seen a pack of cool cigarettes in the desk drawers. I recently took a 1 a.m. cab back from the airport. It was a long drive, so we talked. We talked about his life, his work, and his beliefs. I told him that I make a podcast, and he told me that I needed to do an episode about how aliens helped the ancient Egyptians build the pyramids. I asked him how he knew that, and he told me it was written in the Torah. I didn't fact-check him on that, but the thing is that I could have. I could have asked him for the passage and looked it up online and agreed or disagreed with his interpretation of the scripture. I can't do that for Scientology, though, because even some of the most basic tenets of the religion are practically inaccessible to me unless I'm willing to sacrifice many years and thousands of dollars. And so when my friend Elizabeth wrongly suggests that Scientologists build offices in their churches prepared for the return of their founder, the best denial that I can find is from the person working the front desk of the church. Or from my source at the info center, or for that matter, Tony Ortega. But when Tony Ortega tells me about Scientology's beliefs in aliens, the highest authority that I can counter that with is an official FAQ that calls this a scurrilous statement, issued by the quote-unquote internet fringe, intentionally designed to ridicule Scientologists and denigrate their actual religious beliefs. L. Ron Hubbard's been dead for 30 years now. And in those 30 years, there's been an emergence of a new generation of prolific fiction writers. Of course, none have been prolific enough to knock L. Ron Hubbard out of the Guinness Book of World Records. His 1,084 published titles still win. But these new writers, they understand something that he may have overlooked. An author's fans are their best asset and their worst enemy. These fans, they live a sometimes rabid existence. They'll sometimes froth at the mouth once they've chewed through the entire work of a literary canon. And when that happens, these fans will seek out new material outside what's accessible in the official canon. They'll find or write fan fictions full of speculation on partially baked theories, garbled combinations, mixed truths about characters, their backstories, and their motivations. Authors may be the one who create worlds, but it's their fans who furnish them.
Thank you for putting it into the proper perspective. That is the perspective that LRH had. The rest of this event is devoted to informing you of a few more details.
Scientology secrecy permits a certain jumbling of what's real and what's not. The facts written in the canon and the rumors of the fan fiction are sometimes too difficult to separate. So where is Hubbard now?
I guess I could say, you could say, I believe the empty chair and what it tells me. It tells me that it's kind of a museum, a memory of someone who was here that built a story around himself or made himself into a myth somehow that people can project things onto, their hopes and wishes and dreams for a better life. But that's something that's, it's also a myth that's vague enough or secretive enough that it keeps you guessing, it keeps you looking for more and trying to fill that, I guess that, maybe to stretch the metaphor a bit, to fill the chair with something, like to put something in that seat. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's what all religion does, in a way.
You can find a picture of L. Ron Hubbard's Copenhagen office over on our website, hbmpodcast.com. There you'll also find a link to Freedom Magazine, which my source at the Info Center told me was a good place to learn about the religion. They also recommended an advocacy group called Scientologists Taking Action Against Discrimination, whose stated goal is to end the, quote, defamation and bigotry towards Scientologists and the Scientology religion, and to protect everyone's basic inalienable right to practice their chosen faith. You can find Tony Ortega's writing on his blog, The Underground Bunker, at tonyortega.org. Again, links on our own website, hbmpodcast.com. So recently we launched this listener voicemail line. Thank you for all the nice calls. Bethany and I are going to use some of your voicemails from our last prompt in an upcoming episode. But now we have another question for you. Have you ever intentionally withheld knowledge? Maybe you know the location of a buried treasure, or maybe you have a second family in another state, or maybe you won't tell your kids the secret family pot roast recipe. Maybe something else. Maybe you charged someone for sweet onions once when they really bought normal onions. So this is the question. Have you ever withheld knowledge? And if so, whose sake was it for? Was it the right thing to do? Give us a call. Our number is 765-374-5263. Again, 765-374-5263. You can also send a voice memo to hbmpodcast@gmail.com. This episode was produced by me, Jeff Entman, along with help from Bethany Denton. Our editor at KCRW is Nick White, and the manager of KCRW's independent producer project is Kristen Lepore. Music on this episode came from Sarocell and The Black Spot. And one last thing, KCRW wants to learn more about you, who you are, and how you listen. So if you have 3 minutes to spare and you want to help us out, head over to kcrw.com/survey. And from Beth and me and everyone else, thank you for doing that. And thank you for listening. More episodes soon.